Since we're talking about it, we should just start the spoiler cast of BioShock Infinite. Welcome to the Fire Everything podcast spoiler cast of BioShock Infinite. I'm Paul.
I'm Sam.
I'm Nate. And this, you said BioShock Infinite like three times in that sentence.
Yes, I'll cut it out. Well,
just to clarify what we're spoiling here. So, if you guys are here because you just kind of downloaded the next podcast off of iTunes, we're going to be doing a spoiler cast on BioShock Infinite, and
if you listen to this and you haven't beaten it, because it's your own goddamn fault.
Spoiler warning.
We've given you so much fair warning up until this point that I you cannot blame us.
Yes.
So, I guess just like the last one we did, before we get into specifics,
general impressions
of the game. Paul, you go first.
Okay. I'm a big fan of this game. I think it's the best game of this year so far. I don't think it will be the best game of the year. I think with The Last of Us coming out, that's the potential game that I'm holding out for. But I think it'll get nominated, and I think if this game came out last year, I think we would have probably nominated it last year, because last year was a really weak year.
Agreed.
But I
think if this had come out last year, I'd be putting it story-wise ahead of Mass Effect.
Yes, I would agree with that. I would agree with that most definitely. I really like the story. I think that the story was really great. What I didn't really like about it was how the story was told a lot of the times, especially at the end, because, you know, it gets to the end, and I'm not going to say anything, you know, cause I'll wait till we get to that part. But it gets to the end, and then there's within the last 30 to, you know, 30 minutes of the game, it hits you with like, boom, surprise. And they just keep going over and over again. And like, I got most of them. But there were key things, and, you know, Nate, you had to explain certain things to me, you know, that I didn't understand. And I think they could have made a lot clearer by just vocalizing some things or extending that huge explosion of surprises instead of the last 30 minutes into the last hour of the game. As far as the gameplay goes, I don't think, like, a bunch of people are saying, oh, this is totally revolutionizing. That's not the right word. You know, revolutionizing the first person shooter. I'm kind of like, no, not at all. I think it's a pretty normal shooter. I think that, you know, you have powers, you know, vigors instead of plasmids, like you had in the other BioShocks. You know, so it was nice to play a first person shooter that had mana. That was kind of cool. And I was a big fan of the melee weapon that you could jump on and ride rails. I like that a lot, and I like doing diving kills. So that bit of the gameplay I liked. As far as the shooting, it was okay. You know, it was shooting. So I don't know. Generally, I really like the game, but not game of the year for me. Game of the year so far, however. So I don't know. That was all over the place. Go ahead, Nate.
I think this game is fucking amazing. Like, what it does with the story is so fucking cool. Like, I'm one of those people who, like, has watched Inception, like, 6 or 7 times. Because I wanted to know every single thing, and that's why I played through BioShock Infinite immediately after I beat it. Like, right away. I
did started you, it through again. Before you keep going, did you hear the thing about Inception? About how they proved that... a bunch of fans of Inception proved... that the and Inception's been out for a couple of years, so I don't feel bad spoiling this.
Yeah.
Inception spoilers.
Inception spoiler cast and BioShock Infinite. You're getting a double dose today.
They figured out that a bunch of fans figured out that Leonardo DiCaprio is in the real world at the end, because they talk about a lot in the movie about how your totem has to be something that only you know, and yet he ends up using what's her face, her his wife's totem, the little top. But they, the fans explained that that's not his actual totem. His totem is his wedding ring, because if you watch in all the scenes where he's dreaming, he's wearing his wedding ring. But whenever he's awake and in the real world, he's not wearing his wedding ring. And in the final scene at the end of the movie, he is not, in fact, wearing his wedding ring.
Damn. double dosing succeeded.
God, now I gotta watch Inception an eighth time.
I thought that was an interesting little note. I watched it, I was like, oh, that's completely true. Anyways, go back to your Bioshock Infinite thing. I'm sorry I interrupted.
Nos, cool. I'm gonna watch it an eighth time now.
I thought you said you watched it six times.
Well, seventh then. Fuck you. Anyways, I like things where like movies or like forms of media where like there's just so much going on. There's a lot of like cool stuff. Like if you don't pay attention, you don't get it all. And that was why like the first time I beat Bioshock Infinite, like I was kind of confused at first. So I went right back into it and played through it again. Found every single Vox phone, and I can explain the whole story to you verbatim now that I played that game twice. And I think it's so awesome because the game isn't initially about what you think it is. A lot of people think it's about Booker and this quest to save his daughter, but it's actually
don't go into too much detail.
It's mainly about the Lutesses, and the Lutesses are such a cool character, and I'm not saying Booker's not a cool character, but the Lutesses are the most interesting character, and I'll get to that why later. But the gameplay is better than Bioshock 1. Like Bioshock 1, I forced myself to be, I don't know, like the gameplay got really boring after a while. Like you felt really powerful at the end of the game, but like, I don't know, it was just a lot of scrounging a lot of the time. Like there was never a time where I was like, oh, I feel so cool right now. This game just felt a lot better. Like Elizabeth is super helpful. I think the skylines were badass as fuck. Like I would jump on the skyline, jump off and hit someone, then jump right back on the skyline, and then fucking jump off the skyline, then I jump on people while they're going on the skylines. There's just so much shit to do in that game. I had a friend come over and I showed him just like one of the skyline fights, and he was just like, holy shit, this is amazing. And I was like, yeah. I was like, I think this game's gonna win Game of the Year, even over Last of Us. Just because of what it does. Like, it's just so fucking fun. It's so much to do, and the storyline is just so fucking good. I think it's the best game to come out since Uncharted 2.
Huh.
And Uncharted 2 is my favorite game of all time.
Okay. Personally, I felt that the story was probably... It's definitely the best so far this year. In recent memory, I can't think of a story that's been told so well in a single video game, and I say that because anybody who's listened to this podcast knows I have a hard on for the Mass Effect series. but that's different because they have to establish a story over the course of three games, and Bioshock Infinite establishes I'd say just as rich of a story in one game, which is quite the accomplishment in my opinion. It's got a great story. And I don't think I was as confused as Paul was as far as the plot. There are some things that I still don't quite understand. But I, for the most part, I understood the plot and I understood the ending and all that stuff. So I think it has a great story, and I think that the visual style of the game is awesome. I like that it's got kind of, you know, you get that early 1900s, you know, boardwalk feel when you're in Colombia, but you know, obviously everything's in the sky, so you have that alternate thing, and it's got a little bit of a cartoony. It almost reminds me of like Fable, the way they took the art direction, because it's kind of can't decide whether it's going to be cartoony or if it's going to be realistic or whatever. But I like the style; it works really well for the universe. On the other hand, I felt like gameplay could have been a lot better than it was. I ran in on last week's podcast saying how much I hated the gameplay, and the more I thought about it afterwards, I didn't hate the gameplay. It wasn't the worst gameplay that I've ever played around with, but I think there were some improvements that they could have made with the gameplay. There were a lot of really cool gameplay elements. I just mean that the core, everything you could do with the controller at the beginning of the game, I think could have been improved a little bit. Like in my opinion, I think that swapping between your different vigors could have easily been mapped to the D-pad, and then they could have allowed a left trigger aiming system. And I think that probably would have solved it for me.
What did they have mapped to the D-pad? Because I played it on PC.
There's nothing mapped to the D-pad. There's,
are you serious?
There's down on the D-pad right lets you. It lets you listen to voxophones when you pick it up on the D-pad is. And then I don't know what
up
the other...
Up on the D-pad is how you see where you go.
They could have just made that like start or select or something.
Up on the... Or like, yeah, they could have
selected
or
like, that menu so you could check like, your shit.
Or like, well, I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, I had some complaints with the gameplay. It does some cool stuff, but to be completely honest, there's only two new gameplay elements that weren't in the original BioShock games, and that's playing with the skyline, which, in my opinion, other than a method of transportation to your next objective, was completely useless. I never saw a use like it. It's never in a position where using it to get away from a combat situation is very helpful. If anything, it just puts you out in the open. So I wasn't really able to use it strategically all that often. Maybe that's just me. And then the other gameplay element is every now and then Elizabeth can bring things from other dimensions in. And I really like that gameplay element. I think that that was probably the most useful gameplay element, was all the things that Elizabeth could do, whether it's summoning a turret that will help you fight, or summoning med kits in a little box for you. I think that those were probably the most helpful things. But the skyline, I don't know. I wasn't all over it. And then there's gear. That's the third one. I completely forgot that there was a third one. The gear I thought was a really cool touch, because it meant that if you really liked a particular set of plasmids or weapons, you could play with your playstyle, and it wasn't always going to be about you need to stick to these core concepts. It was, if you wanted to, you could do a couple of things. But in my opinion, the aiming felt clunky to me, but that's... If I'm truthful to myself, that comes down to me as a gamer, not the game itself. So I think that the game was awesome, but in my opinion, the controls could have been better.
Okay. All right, well, let's get into what happened in the story. So basically starts off, you're on a boat with these random people.
On a boat, yeah, we're going fast, yeah.
You're on a boat with these random people.
And they're talking about something called the thought experiment. That's something you have to realize. Most people don't realize that the first time they play through. They're talking about something called the thought experiment.
Yeah.
And you don't know what that is. You're just kind of like, I wonder what that is.
Goodness. But yeah, so you're on a boat, and they are rowing the boat for you, and you're in the middle of the ocean pretty much.
He doesn't row.
Yes, they say that. Thank you, Nate.
There's two different meanings to that as well.
Okay. Would you like to talk about this?
Would you like to continue making it cryptic? It's a fucking spoiler cast where we talk about the facts.
There's a whole bunch of stuff that happens in the beginning of the game that people don't realize that actually has relating to the ending.
Okay, well, you know this inside out, so then why don't you talk about it?
All right. Like, the way they're talking, like, Booker is, he's sitting there just like, you know, bring us the girl, wipe away the debt, right? And they're talking about, like, he doesn't row, basically, because they're just kind of talking in third person about him, and like the whole point of he doesn't row is he doesn't know. Yeah. So, but then they drop you off at the lighthouse, and he says basically, he's like, is anyone going to come pick me up? And they're like, oh, we sure hope so. And then they go away. And then you go in the lighthouse and you see that, someone's been killed. And there's also a sign in the lighthouse that says, make sure you keep DeWitt away from, or it's like something like that. It says, make sure you keep DeWitt away. And then it says, comma C, which is Comstock. And then you follow the whatever on the paper. But
with great power comes great responsibility, Nate. Come
sorry.
On.
I mean, the pattern. You follow the pattern, and then the thing takes you.
So he gets to Columbia.
Oh my god!
By taking a fucking elevator to this guy. Nate, we are not going to describe this game fucking. Also,
Let's
go through the 1,000-page script of BioShock Infinite.
Wait, no. I think there was a bookshelf in the corner. It was knocked over. There was about four or five books.
Scene one.
Sorry, this game makes me all excited. I've made sure to find out every little thing.
And there is a storm going.
Okay.
On.
Anyway, so you get to Columbia. Okay. All right. I'll stop. Okay.
Jackets and rowing the boat. One fits in the back.
I will pull this over. Okay. All
right, so you get to Columbia, and basically there's a festival happening or whatever, and you learn about plasmids and whatnot. I'm trying to go as fast as possible to get to good parts. Vigors. I said plasmids, huh?
Yeah, you did.
Wow. There's a huge difference,
which is one was made in the early 1900s, one was made.
As you're going into the festival or whatever, you see the sign, and it says, Watch out for the false shepherd, as it'll lead the lamb astray. And it has a picture of a hand that has an AD on it. And Booker looks down and says, shit, and sees there's an AD on his hand. And you don't really know why. And then so you go to the festival. And right before you go in, this boy's like, gives you a telegram that says, do not pick up ball number 77. And so he goes in the festival, picks up ball number 77, and gets chosen to have to throw the baseball at either the Irish couple or the announcer guy. So which one?
Just to be clear, so Columbia has a lot of super – they basically praise white supremacy in Columbia. So all of the minorities, be you Irish or black or Asian or anything else, if you aren't white, you're basically not...
And that's
not...
like the purest form of white, too.
Exactly.
You know.
So there's a couple, and it's an Irish guy and a black woman, and he's told to
throw the baseball.
First throw with the baseball at this couple.
And what did you guys do?
I tried to throw it at the guy.
I threw it at the guy.
I not, threw it at the I'm just kidding.
Oh, wait. My first time, I threw it at the couple.
Why?
Because I was trying to fit in.
Oh, dude. You just got peer pressured into racism.
Yeah. I was trying
what
to fit
are you
in.
Doing,
I
Nate?
I didn't know what to expect.
That's how it all comes down, man.
I didn't know what to expect. I was like, fuck.
What happened? Tell us what happened when you tried to throw it at the couple.
The same thing that happened to you.
Okay.
Okay,
I'm just going to let you know. I play the game twice. I'm the only person who's played the game twice. There's only two decisions at most things. None of the decisions change anything, except maybe who contacts you at different parts during the game. Like, say you throw it at Fink, then the couple comes and contacts you later on. But if you throw it at the couple, Fink comes and contacts you later on and gives you a piece of gear. That's all it does.
Oh.
Just like if you kill the white guy, fuck, what's his name? The bearded guy, the general.
Yep.
If you kill him, he doesn't show up again. He shows up in the
the
weapons.
Before you kill Chen Lin, he shows up in there in the room being like tortured, and he asks you to kill him.
I killed him then. I don't know about you guys.
I killed him at the time of. I never killed him. I didn't realize it.
I killed him. I killed him when he asked me to.
I accidentally killed him. That's funny. I didn't know he asked you to kill him because I had the gear on that made it so that you lunge to melee, and I instinctively pressed it after I had already shot a guy to death, and it thought that I meant that I wanted to lunge at the guy in the chair. I didn't even know it was him until after he was dead. and Elizabeth started talking about him. I was like, oh, is that who that was?
Yeah.
I don't even know anymore. I'm just killing people.
Continuing the game, after that happens, basically you're like...
You go through the city pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, you start going through the city. I mean, I don't want to get into too much detail because you guys are yelling at me again.
You're working your way to try to get to the tower to get to Elizabeth.
Well, and then you go through the Order of the Raven, which is the Lady Comstock's like secret soldiers, basically.
But they're essentially the Ku Klux Klan.
Basically, yeah. Now they've become the Ku Klux Klan, now that Lady Comstock's dead. And then basically, you know, some fighting happens and some skyline stuff happens, and you finally get to Elizabeth. And when you first get to Elizabeth, you realize that, like, they're doing tests on her. And
yeah, and then she's living in a house in the tower.
There's this huge statue of the Angel Columbia. And it's made of gold, but it's hollow, and inside the statue, it's like a tower.
Yeah.
And that's where they keep Elizabeth at the top of the tower.
And they're like siphoning energy from her, basically.
It's very classic video game, you know? The entire, you gotta go to the top, you gotta find the tower, you gotta get to the top of the tower, you gotta save the girl.
That's very, very classic everything story. But yeah, and throughout the entire house, every mirror... And everything, you know, they could, like, see what she's doing, so they're watching her at all times. You could tell that she's very much an experiment. And you finally work your way into...
her room.
Into the library, I think it was.
And it turns out the key that you were given in the box at the beginning opens the door to let her out.
Yep.
And so you get her out, and Songbird's pissed, who's basically her watcher. And Songbird,
this giant robot thing.
Yeah, it's basically a giant robot, but there's a man inside of it that you find out later on. So, there's a voxophone where Fink's talking about how he looked into a world where there were man and machine merged together. It's kind of where he got the idea for Songbird and for the Handyman.
Mm-hmm.
You start to escape or whatever. And basically, this is when the game, like, truly starts, I guess.
Yeah. I was, like, I was fucking freaking out when he was attacking me in there.
And then you wake up on a beach, and this is the first time, like, I mean, I guess not the first time, but you wake up on the beach after being, like, unconscious and seeing New York burning in, like, a vision in your head. And then the game basically starts, and you start making your way through the city. And
making your way downtown.
Yeah, making your way downtown.
There was a slight choice that you had to make really quick after this part.
Oh yeah,
it was you go into the station. You're like, you need a ticket or some shit, and the guy is on the phone and he's looking really suspicious. And you have two options. You have to like pressure him to give you an answer, or to draw your weapon. And I pressured him to give me an answer, and I ended up getting stabbed in the hand.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you guys chose differently and did not get stabbed in the hand.
I chose to draw my gun on him, and
you don't get stabbed.
But I was wondering, because after this, you kill a couple people in that room. Elizabeth runs off because she's super freaked out.
She's super freaked out either way.
Is she super freaked out?
I beat the game both ways.
Yeah. Okay.
Like I told you, nothing changes.
This is the first time in the game that Elizabeth watches you kill people, and she freaks out for about 5 seconds, and then after that, she's all honky-dory to toss you guns and ammunition.
Yep.
Well, because the thing is, you kind of promise her you're going to take her to Paris. That's the whole point. Like, you say, hey, I'll take you to Paris, because that's where she wants to.
No, Booker's a dick.
Anyways, so then you're trying to get to the First Lady airship, and Comstock basically stops you, and he says, fuck you, you're not going anywhere. And he turns off the thing, so you have to go get Shock Jockey, and you go into this museum that's basically supposed to be the history of Columbia, and it's not right at all. Basically, it implies that during the Battle of Wounded Knee, that Comstock was the one who saved everyone, and then during the Boxer Rebellion, that Comstock was the took, which actually did happen. Comstock actually took Columbia into the Boxer Rebellion and attacked them, but it's not like Comstock was a god. Comstock was then disowned by the United States or government, and that's why no one had ever heard of Columbia in such a long time, because it actually after Columbia attacks the Boxer Rebellion, like it's not. No one knows where it is anymore, basically.
Okay, yes.
And then...
And that's when you meet What's-His-Face for the first time in the game, at least.
Trying to think what's his name. What's his name? The guy. Slate. Slate starts contacting you, basically telling... He used to be a general for Comstock. And he's basically like, I want a soldier's death. I want you to kill me and all my men. And so you chase him through the final part of the exhibit, which is basically the history of Lady Comstock and kind of the story, a little bit more story of Columbia. And you learn that in the story of Columbia, Daisy Fitzroy was actually the one who murdered Lady Comstock. And to get back at her, after Comstock basically disowns her, she creates the Vox Populi. That's at least the story that he tells the people of Columbia. And then I'm trying to think. You guys beat this game most recent. What happens after that? I can't remember.
You have the choice to either kill or spare Slate, but either way, it's not really a good ending for him. You go back to power up the... gondola that you need to take to get to the First Lady airship using the shock jockey. You do that. You get on the airship. Booker enters in the... He enters in the navigation for New York, not for Paris, and Elizabeth knows this, so she calls him out on it, and he starts trying to defend himself, and she knocks him out. When he wakes up, the Vox Populi are on board the ship, and Daisy Fitzroy basically says, if you can get this
Well, who this, is this, we didn't explain who is the Vox?
The Vox Populi are basically in rebellion against the I'd say it's the upper class majority of Colombia, because they basically keep all of the racial minorities and all of the poor people down in Shantytown.
And but they're trying to slowly revenge against Comstock. That's Daisy's
plan. Right, they're
plan.
Raising a rebellion. So Daisy Fitzroy's like, hey, Booker, if you can manage to get this gunsmith to manufacture us weapons, then I'll give you your airship back. And so you go and you find Elizabeth, and after you save her from some police that capture her, she agrees to help you find the gunsmith. And this is the part in the story where things get a little bit more weird, because she reveals that, I don't know, I'm not sure if she reveals it here or earlier. No, she reveals this earlier, that she can do these things. She can do this thing where there are tears between our dimension and other dimensions where things are slightly different. And so when you finally find this gunsmith, and I think he's in Fink's dungeon or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's dead. They've interrogated and beaten him to death because they already think that he's working for the Vox Populi. But Elizabeth's able to open a tear that brings both of you into a dimension where he never died. But from that dimension, even though he never died, the police did impound his manufacturing weapons, his weapon manufacturing items and stuff like that. So you go and find it, and Elizabeth opens another tear, basically to a dimension where the police never impounded the weapons. And it's from there that you, in that dimension, Booker DeWitt is the martyr hero of the Vox Populi, who sacrificed himself so that the Vox Populi could go on. And so there you get some teammates, actually. You get some people that help you fight the police.
I kept killing them with the fucking birds. They did not want to survive for me. I just kept birding them. They kept getting birded. They kept getting my way.
Being honest, I didn't use the vigors probably as much as I should throughout the entire game.
I think that's where I was having a lot of my difficulties, was because I'm not very good at multi-managing with that. And, like, I'm using my rifle, but I never had the right vigor on cue, so I was constantly trying to switch back and forth and stuff. But you make your way up, and...
I used a lot of murder crows, I'm not going to lie.
Eventually, Daisy makes her way to Fink after basically saying that Booker isn't the Booker that she knew. Like, she kind of was on to them, and that knew that Booker wasn't who he claimed to be, and that he was Booker from somewhere else. So she makes it very clear that you're not on the same side. The Vox start fighting you again. She kills Fink. She's about to kill Fink's son, or just a boy. I don't know who it was.
Just a random boy.
This is a random boy. She's just fucking crazy. That's the thing. Like the part random... where, because as you're leaving, like Finkton, he's like the Vox Populi and Comstock, and the founders are the same people, just different names. Because he can like already tell, like, these people are bad people.
Right.
Like, they're legit something wrong with them.
Yeah, anyway, Daisy's going to kill this kid. So Elizabeth sneaks up behind her and stabs her with a huge pair of scissors, which is pretty fucked up.
Must run in the family. That's what she says in that game, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Anyway,
what happens after that? God, there's so much shit that happens in this
game. Well, that's the thing, is like most games, it's like, oh, this happens and this happens. Like, there's just
the problem is that we're going from the contrast from God of War Ascension, where fucking two things happened, to this.
Oh, I remember.
Sam remembers.
After that, apparently, you are trying to get to an airship. Because I don't know what happened to the first lady airship, but you don't end up using it. But Comstock fucking takes it down. You end up trying to break into Comstock House to get to his airship, but it's sealed, and you.
You can only
but
get it only if
the
you're.
Gate recognizes Elizabeth as her mother, and so she is like, "Well, I guess we're going to go get my mom's hand from her grave." So you go to try to do that
because she fucking hates her mom at this point because she's kind of learned that like my mom like let me, you know, just kind of die. Like
yeah,
she's pretty
she,
pissed off at this point.
And so you go to her grave. There's a device set up in place to fuck with Elizabeth and make her open a tear. And so it opens a tear to a universe where the spirit of – it's kind of a spirit of Lady Comstock combined with Elizabeth's hatred for Lady Comstock.
Basically, yeah.
Like she it basically makes Elizabeth create this like pseudo spirit thing that you have to track down, and eventually you get it to open the door for you. But it takes you to several different tears where it's kind of revealed that Elizabeth isn't actually Comstock's daughter.
Real daughter.
Elizabeth was taken through a tear. So she's from another dimension. And after you get the gate open, kind of losing.
Yeah, okay, so after here's a little tiny bit. It didn't really pertain to the story, but I was just like, what? Because constantly throughout this game, I think one of the great things that it does, and it totally succeeds at doing, is it constantly gives you like little hints as to what's going on. It constantly just here's a little hint, here's a little tidbit.
You get it right.
Yeah, but you never get it right. And like I'll get to a point, I'm like, just as I start, I'm thinking, oh, okay, I think I know what's going on. And then something else will happen. I'll be like, oh, just kidding. All right. You know? And around this part of the game, I remember there was a tear with music coming out of it. And it was
Fortunate Son.
Yes, it was. You know, classic Vietnam.
Some folks are born, some of the spoon in hand.
And I was just like, what? And then I'm like, oh, this is connecting back to how the Beach Boys song was playing at the beginning of the game, how they were singing the Beach Boys song, and you know, a bunch of other shit. So I found that incredibly interesting. Anyway, moving
there's
on.
Also, there's also a red tear somewhere in the game.
She opens one at the beginning of the game that's playing everybody
wants
to
rule the
world.
Tears for Fears, and it's Paris, but it's like modern day, or no, it's like Paris in the 80s, and it's like outside of a theater where it's playing Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. around this time, you also there's also a Vox phone where you learn that Fink's actually been stealing music from other time frames.
Yes,
yeah,
I got
in
that
the
one.
Credits, there's actually a there's like a really old timey rendition of Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
It's pretty awesome.
It's pretty wonderful.
Yeah, it really is.
So this is a time when the Songbird finally gets to you again, basically, and Songbird finally gets you. And Elizabeth has to stop him from basically killing you. And she says, basically, take me back. You know, I never should have left. And then Elizabeth goes off on her own, and Booker's like, I have to save her. Like, this is, like, isn't a joke anymore. Like, this, I have to save her. You know, wing the girl, wipe away the debt. And so he goes on to Comstock House. And this is about the time that, this is where people don't really understand what's going on. So what happens is, as you're crossing the bridge, you get pulled into another time, basically you get pulled into the future, where it's either the future or it's another universe.
No, it's the future because it's you see a modern day New York getting bombed by Elizabeth and Columbia, and she basically explains that Songbird
always
every single time stops his attempts to rescue Elizabeth, but because she's inherited all of Comstock's resources, she knows how to control the Songbird, and she passes that information on to Booker through a cryptic little
basically,
sheet of paper.
What happens when she gets kidnapped is they reprogram her to be obedient, basically, is what it's implied.
Yeah.
And then Booker stops her from being reprogrammed in his world.
Okay, and then you go back to she's captured and she's like being tortured or whatever.
Right.
This part was my favorite part of the game.
I love this part.
Just because it did several things. You know, one, it added like the creepiness of like the original BioShock because you had to sneak around. I mean, you didn't have to, but like there was limited ammo and resources and everything. And of course, Elizabeth wasn't with you, so she wasn't giving you resources and everything, you know. And so I just remember I was in my room and I had my headphones on and I had just been playing. I had been playing the shit out of the game and I'd been going for hours.
Because you're super addicted. Because it's like yeah,
and I was super fucking addicted. And like I was so attached to the characters in the game, and I just remember her like screaming in like because she's getting tortured, and like every time she screamed I was like if you were standing in the room with me, you would have been able to see me getting like just physically agitated. Like I was just like, motherfucker,
if she
fucking screams again, I was getting so like motherfucker, like I just wanted to scream at the screen like stop doing it, you know?
If I could stop the progress of us explaining the plot real quick, one thing that they do wonderfully for Elizabeth's writing is that while she isn't a weak character and she can take care of herself a lot, they do a really wonderful job of writing Elizabeth in such a way that you feel very protective of her.
Yep.
You feel like you have an immense connection with Elizabeth, and that if she isn't safe, then the world is not okay. And you need to make it right. Like, they did a really good job of making you emotionally invested and making sure Elizabeth was safe.
A lot of people
then
like,
finally
said that they've fallen in love with her.
I know. That's
that's no. Sorry.
I wouldn't go that far. I don't have that much of an emotional attachment. I didn't even have that much of an emotional attachment to like the love interest.
I have that in Elena. I love Elena. Like,
oh my god.
Like I legit.
Oh
my god. I'm in love
you
with
and
Elena.
Fucking Elena. But yeah, fucking I love that part so much.
Well, the coolest thing about this is like you kind of realize around this time like she's way more powerful than you ever thought possible.
Yeah, and that's basically what happens next.
You know, well, because you let her go, she's like inside this glass room and there's
you turn
two
off
people
the generators
trying to use
or whatever.
These electric things to take they're using the siphon to try to take her energy out of her. And then you basically turn off the generators and she breaks free and opens this huge tear to fucking Kansas with a fucking tornado that comes through and sucks up.
She says who's going to stop me, basically.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah, and then you go down there and she's like, we have to go after Comstock. And you're like, and you know, or Booker's
Booker.
Like, he's like, no, let's just leave it. Let's just get the hell out of here. And she's like, what are you going to stop me? And she opens the tear back up and you see this tornado. And I'm like, Booker, choose your words carefully, bro.
Yeah.
And he's like,
she's
no,
because basically
I'm
at this point, she's like, she's going to kill Comstock. Like, there's nothing stopping her from killing him. Because she's realized now at this point that everything that's happened has happened because of him. And the thing is, like, he was the reason that she hated her mother. Like, she was the reason that everything that's bad that's ever happened to her has happened. And she's realized that now, and she's fucking pissed.
She's fucking pissed.
She's going to kill him. And then this is that bet, like, the really, really good scene, though, where they're sitting on the boat and Booker says... Or Elizabeth says to Booker, Booker, are you afraid of God? And she says, no, I'm afraid of you. Basically implying that this Booker doesn't really believe in a God.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Booker and Elizabeth make their way to Comstock's airship. After much fighting, you finally find Comstock. Comstock demands that Booker explains Elizabeth passed to her, and Booker's like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, and he's like, tell her why she's missing a finger. And Booker gets so angry and like doesn't understand, so confused and angry that he drowns Comstock.
Well, and that's something I didn't fully understand. Like, do you think that he understood? Like, do you think that when he asked...
No, he doesn't. They explained that he doesn't.
Okay. No, he doesn't know what the heck he's talking about.
That's he doesn't know what's going on. We'll talk about that more when we get to the ending.
This is... Okay, here's where... After this happens, this is where the game kind of pissed me off. I don't think this ending scene was very good. Not the scene where we're walking around by ourselves.
You mean the final battle?
Yeah, I hated it.
It felt a little underwhelming once I figured out how to do it.
Oh my god, it fucking pissed me off.
It was hard on hard. You have no idea how hard this was on hard.
I didn't do it the first time. I was hoping there was going to be a big boss battle.
I wanted to fight Songbird.
Yeah, I wanted to fight Songbird too.
As well. But I don't know. So they, Booker and Elizabeth are like, I don't know what the fuck he's talking about. And Elizabeth's like, I think you do, but I just think that you don't remember. And so they're like, well, the only way we're going to find out is if we destroy the siphon, because the siphon is directly tied to Elizabeth's powers being limited, because they drained a lot of her powers when she was younger. So Elizabeth is like, well, I'll be able to access all of my power and we'll be able to learn the truth if we destroy the siphon. But the entire tower that she was being kept in was the siphon. And so now that they have Songbird under the control, they fight off the Vox Populi, who catch up with Comstock's airship, and they start fucking it up pretty bad. You're able to use Songbird and command him to destroy certain things.
That was pretty cool.
But it felt a little underwhelming.
It was just frustrating, because the thing is, you're supposed to destroy the Zeppelins, but there's just a million fucking Patriots coming at you.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with the Zeppelins, but
the Patriots just pissed me off.
The thing that I discovered is that the Zeppelins, while they have more health, they don't do any damage to the generator. It's the Patriots you got to worry about, and Songbird has a cooldown that differs depending on what target you use. If you do the ground attack that destroys everybody on there, the cooldown's really quick, and you can just command him to do that every time, and you can have him destroy the Zeppelins afterwards. They really don't do that much damage, unless it's one of the actual, like, full-size airships.
I still think the scene was just underwhelming.
It was. For a gameplay standpoint, it was incredibly underwhelming.
Yes. Yeah. So basically, you make your way back to the Statue of Columbia, and you order the Songbird to destroy the siphon. And so he destroys the siphon. There's this huge
explosion.
There's a bunch of light, and everything goes dark for a second. And when Booker wakes up, him and Elizabeth are in Rapture.
And the thing is, like, the reason she has the power to take people to Rapture is because basically the siphon was taking her power away and making it so she couldn't remember a lot of things as well.
Or no. There wasn't an explosion. After the siphon's destroyed, the Songbird tries to attack him. To attack Booker.
And so she opens a tear.
The tear that puts them in Rapture.
Yeah, and drowns Songbird. Because Songbird
it isn't the drowning that does it. It's that there's
the pressure
below sea level, that the pressure outside of the building.
I thought it was implied he can't be in water, because when he goes to the beach, that one part where he's at the beach and he's in the water and Songbird attacks him, Songbird goes in the water to get him. And his eye starts to crack. I think it's just water with Songbird. I'm pretty sure Songbird can't go in the water.
That might be part of it, but they definitely show his, like...
Yeah, him breaking.
He's like a person. Yeah, he's a person inside there, so yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he would die either way, but he dies because he's outside of Rapture. And so Booker's like, where are we? And Elizabeth is like...
I don't know, bro.
Let's go here. So they take the bathysphere to the surface, and there's the lighthouse that's at the beginning of the game. And Booker's like, huh, that's weird. And Elizabeth is like, look at them. Look at all the doors. And Booker looks up, and he's like, oh, you mean like the stars? And she's like, no, they're doors. And you're like, I don't know what the fuck she's talking about. So you walk through the door at the lighthouse, and they travel to a place outside of space and time containing it's just millions of lighthouses.
Basically, it's like
the eye can see, and you can see Booker and Elizabeth on some of the bridges between them, like in the distance, you can see a couple of like alternate versions of them having the exact same conversation and walking on the same bridges and stuff, just to different realities.
Basically, it's everything that, that is and will be. Like, she starts to imply that that every single door has another songbird or another rapture or another Elizabeth or another Comstock inside of it. There's millions and millions of Comstocks and Elizabeths, basically. And each door takes them to a different one, a different, like, part. So this is about the time where you go in the door, and you go in the door, and there's you're at Booker's baptism. And Booker is about to get baptized, and he, at the last minute, he says no. And she basically implies, she's like, you didn't take the baptism, did you, Booker? And he says, no, I didn't. And basically, this is kind of where you start to like, oh, I wonder what that has to do with anything. I don't know if you guys are like that, but...
Nope.
No? Okay.
Well, for me, it was like Booker seemed like that character. And so that's what I got out of it.
I was a little weirded out by the way that the scene was portrayed, exactly the way that your baptism to get into Columbia was.
Yeah.
I knew that meant something. I just wasn't sure what it meant until the end.
Yeah.
But basically...
You go back into another door, and it takes you back into your basically your office, your Pinkerton office. And
for
you
the
go
bajillionth
in,
time.
Yeah, for the bajillionth time. And this time you go in, and you go in. You finally get to go in the door on the side, and there's a baby. And Booker's like, there was no baby. There was no baby ever. And then you see Mr. Lutess, and he says, bring us the
Give
girl.
Give us the girl and wipe away the debt.
And he's like, there was no baby. And Elizabeth says he's not going to leave until you give him the baby. Eventually, you give him the baby.
Yeah, you have to.
And so you give him the baby, and he says, Mr. Comstock, thanks you for your generous donation. Have a nice day, basically. Close the door, and he opens the next door, and they're back at the beginning of the game, kind of. And he says, there's no baby again. And he's like, bring us the girl, wipe away the debt. And he's like, I would have never given it to that guy. Like, why would I ever give it to that guy? And basically you hear the Lutesses, they're like, you know, you did try and weasel your way out of it. And it's implied that something like that he goes through another door, and then you see that the baby is being given to Comstock, and they're about to go through a machine. Or the machine that takes them into Columbia. It's basically the machine that goes through universes. And Booker runs up and tries to stop Comstock from going through. And as he starts to stop Comstock from going through, Elizabeth's finger gets cut off. Like, a part of her pinky finger gets cut off.
The baby's finger gets cut off. And it's at that point that it reveals that the baby is Elizabeth. And that Elizabeth is your daughter in an alternate reality.
Yeah, and then it's basically implied that the fact that she can go through universes is because part of her finger... is left in Booker's universe, and the rest of her is in Columbia.
I did not understand that at first.
Yeah,
there's a voxophone that tells you that, but I mean that's what like, that's where it, what it means basically.
I had no idea.
And so basically, the whole time Booker's like, you know, I can't believe I gave my daughter away, and they're back in the boat again, and basically. He goes through the door one more time, or no, maybe not back in the boat, but they go back into the PD office, right? I want to say.
Sure.
They go back to the PD office, and then the Lutesses come, and they open up a portal in the PD office and bring him back to the beginning of the game. But when he enters into the Columbia universe, he gets knocked out. And at the beginning of the game, if you remember, it says... she says, there's a thing that says, Madam, it says Rosalind Lutess, and it says the subject will create his own memories. And basically what it's implied is that when Booker went into the universe that was Columbia was actually in, he created this bring us the girl, wipe away the debt thing for himself because he had to create his own story for while he was there.
Okay.
Right?
I guess.
All he remembers... was bring us the girl and wipe away the debt. And that kind of manifested in he has to bring Elizabeth back. And that kind of got connected because he knows that his daughter is in this dimension. He just doesn't really remember the details.
Okay.
And this is about the time where he's back on the boat again.
right?
Because they're bringing him in, they're trying to take him over to the Watchtower.
See, this is so complicated. That's why I didn't.
The problem with the ending, here's the one problem with the ending, is you go to some places too many times. Like, there's a few places you go to two or three times. It's kind of like you go on the boat twice at the ending. There's two parts.
And this is, you know, when you're doing a game that, like, travels in between dimensions and everything, and when you do a game that has, like, time travel, it's always very tricky because there's always, like, a million things that, you know, have to be explained. And then, you know, certain things don't necessarily add up, but you have to just give it to them because it's a time travel story or it's a dimension story. You know what I mean? And so it's all very complicated. And so I don't necessarily be like, I don't know why this is so complicated. If they're going this route of, you know, dimensions, then yeah, it's going to have to be complicated. I understand that, but I just wish it was, I don't know. I just didn't get so much of it. Like when I beat the game, I was just like, I don't know what the fuck just happened. Like yeah. And that's why it's not like, gonna probably be the game of the year for me.
We'll just get to the ending and then we'll talk about it because we've been talking for a while still. So you finally get through, you know, you're finally back on the boat and Booker's like, we're gonna smother the bastard in his crib. I don't want Comstock to ever live. What he did to you is wrong, all this stuff. So she's like, are you sure you want this, Booker? And he says, yeah. And they are back at the baptism again, and Booker is about to be baptized, or Booker's standing there, and all of a sudden all these Elizabeths come around. And they're like, smother, basically. And the Elizabeth that you were with is gone. The original Elizabeth that you were with is gone because there's no thing around her neck anymore. And it's implied that he's Booker DeWitt. One of them says he's Booker DeWitt. One of them says he's Zachary Comstock. And then the one in the middle says he's both, and they drown him and kill him. And basically this is implying that all the Elizabeths are drowning all the Bookers that will become Comstock. Because what happened was Booker became Comstock after the atrocities he committed at Wounded Knee.
The only way to break the cycle is to prevent him from happening in the first place, because in all the universes where Booker avoids the baptism at the last moment, he remains Booker, while in a bunch of alternate universes, he takes the baptism, finds religion, and adopts the name Zachary Comstock.
And creates Columbia.
Basically Comstock, because he knows that he's Booker, he basically engineers the abduction of Booker's daughter, Anna, to provide him with a blood-related heir, because they explain through a voxophone that he's sterile from his exposure to the Lutece's technology.
Yep.
But he needs a blood heir.
So basically what happens is, after he creates Columbia, he starts working on all the stuff to, like, make Columbia real. He becomes sterile and can't have his own children. But they've been messing around with the technology so much that he realizes that, hey, there might be other people who are in another universe who are me that might have children, and that's how he takes Anna. And that's also, like, the thing about the Lutesses is Rosalind is actually Robert is actually Rosalind in another universe if she was a boy. They're not sisters. They're not sister and brother.
They're not brother and sister. They're the same person.
They're the same exact person. And the thing is, it's implied in a voxophone. The reason the whole game happens is because Robert doesn't feel good about what happened to Booker, and so Robert tells Rosalind, "Hey, if we're gonna do this, we're gonna be together like this. We have to fix this problem." And the reason they keep popping up is because Fink actually kills them while they're working on the machine. Because they figure out they're about to tell that Elizabeth is actually Anna, and that's another why Comstock also kills Lady Comstock and blames Daisy. But then so they go back, and this is why the whole game happens, is because Robert wants to basically undo what he's done wrong.
You guys wait until the end of the credits, right?
Yeah.
What happens at the end of the credits?
At the end of the credits, it's
Booker wakes up in his apartment.
1939.
1893.
I'm sorry. God, I'm stupid.
And he just goes, Anna? And he opens the door to her room, and the screen cuts to black.
Okay. Yeah, I did see that.
It's implied, basically, that what you did was stop the Comstock line from ever happening. But Booker still lives and he has Anna with him because he never got baptized.
Yeah, well, and so since we're like, that's the end of the game pretty much, just like that, my problems with the story, and it was a great story and it had really great characters and everything's really interesting, and you know how it leads you along, like I was saying,
the plot
before.
Happened in the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, it everything happened in the last tiny little chunk of the game, and like while you guys, I'm just listening to you guys explain all this stuff, and it's just like, well, if you listen to the Voxophone, it's just like, I understand that you want to have Voxophones with more information about the game, but I shouldn't have to collect and listen to all the Voxophones in order to understand what happened. Like
I completely agree. I think that the details being put in collectible items that you may or may not find is completely it's a cheap shot. And there are ways they could have trickled that information in, even if it was still on Voxophones, and all of those key plot elements were in Voxophones, where Elizabeth goes, "Hey, Booker, look at this," and you pick it up and listen to it, and they both talk about what they think about all of that. That would be an easy way to work it in. But I do agree that there's so much information that people either will or will not find. I don't consider that merit for the developer. I don't consider that, well, some people are going to get more out of the story than other people if they want to get more out of the story. I don't think that that's fair. I think that, like, I was really invested in the story of BioShock Infinite, and I only found maybe half the Voxophones, and I was looking for a lot of them.
Yeah, me too. I found a lot of them.
I found all 80.
Well, yeah, and I think I found 50. You know,
I think I found 47 of them. I think that was how many I found, and I still got the sense that there were some things that I didn't understand. Like until you brought it up, Nate, I had no idea that that was the reason that Elizabeth could open tears. I did not even know after beating the game why Elizabeth was able to open tears.
You didn't question it after you beat it?
He did. He asked me about it.
Do you know why she's able to open tears? Because they never explained that. They explained that she's important, and I know she's from another universe, but why is she this interdimensional being capable of doing all these crazy ass things? Like, yeah. Why is she able to do that? And I didn't know that until you just brought it up.
Yeah, I've done a lot of research on this game. Like, that's the thing. Well, like, yeah, I did with Inception when I saw the movie. You know,
and,
I did
and
so
in order,
much research.
In order to get the full experience out of it, you have to do all this research,
which is retarded.
Yeah, which is stupid. You know, it's like if you want to get more, like, you know,
I don't know. I found all the Voxophones too, though. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I didn't do a ton of research because I did research, but I didn't do it until after I beat the game and found all the Voxophones.
Here's the thing, though. I mean, assuming that your player is smart enough to figure things out on their own is fine. I like it when a video game doesn't think that I'm stupid. That's fine. But I think that there are some key details that need to be included absolutely, no matter how many times you play through the game, how you choose to play the game. There are details and information in the plot that need to be explained. When you have a character with superpowers, essentially, and they never say why, unless you find this particular item that's hidden in a level, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Because I end the game going, huh, well, how did that entire thing happen? Because nobody ever told me how she's able to open up doorways between dimensions. And, you know, there's other things like that as well. Like, a lot of people didn't know that the Lutesses were the same person. The only reason I knew that was because I picked up the Voxophones that explained that.
I think the Lutesses are the best character in the game.
I think they're...
Because they're flawed, but they're still trying to fix their mistakes.
Well, that's my whole thing about the whole story throughout this game, is that I think the story has fantastic characters. I think that the story is a fantastic story. I think it just isn't told the right way.
Agreed.
And so
But that's kind of how BioShock 1 was, too.
I'm not saying that BioShock 1 was better. I'm just saying, as a general critique, that's what I got from the game. I didn't even play BioShock 1. You know, I haven't played... This is my first BioShock I've played all the way through. So, you know, I guess, BioShock fans out there be like, oh, he doesn't even know jack shit. Well, I'm
sorry. I'm sorry, BioShock fans. I'm sorry to be blunt. But that means that it's been a shitty gameplay you know, it's been a shitty gameplay element for three games now then. Yeah. If that's the way the story's been told,
I kind of liked it, honestly.
80 little recorded devices that you have to find, they aren't, like, given to you. And I'd be okay if most of them weren't given to you, but they made sure that the details that were important on the ones that were important were laid out in some other manner for you to see no matter what. That would be okay. But when there are key plot elements, like, why does Elizabeth have superpowers? Why are the Lutesses so strange? What's the whole story with them?
I kind of like
the significance
that.
Behind the fucking...
I completely disagree with everything you guys are saying, because I kind of like it. Because the thing is, that it makes...
That's never
it makes
happened
the,
before.
It makes
now
the game...
It makes... Ruined. I thought I was best friends with Nate and get everything.
The thing is, it makes the game more replayable, because the thing is, you want to know everything, so you're going to go back to the game and play through it again to make sure you find everything. Like, that's kind of a cool gameplay element. I think that's why people played through Bioshock 1 so many times, is because the next time you play... You know, you may have found out that, you know, Elizabeth actually had her finger left in one universe and she's in another, and that's why. You know, if you just listen to all the Vox phones, you try and find them all. Like, playing through the game, again, gives it another, I don't know, like another...
Well, I mean, that's a decent argument, you know, the fact, like, because the game doesn't have any multiplayer, and, like, I see where you're coming from, Nate. Like, they want to encourage you to play again so you can figure out... You know, really, what's going on? But I don't know. Like, I see your point, but I don't necessarily agree with it. Because, like, if I'm finishing the game and I've literally have so many questions and holes, and like, why did that happen? And which is, and you know, like, I understood the story the least out of the three of us, but I also like went online and like a bunch of people didn't know what the hell happened in Bioshock Infinite. There was a podcast episode, I think, on IGN titled "What the Hell Happened in Bioshock Infinite?" I swear to God, it was either on IGN or GameTrailers, and it was a spoiler cast like this because they were just trying to explain what was going on, and it's. I'll give you an example. Like, one of my favorite story games of all time, which is the original Knights of the Old Republic. I played it on PC. The thing about that game is it has this amazing overarching story. And, you know, they don't have voxophones, but something, because it's an RPG, what you can do is you can talk to the characters, your companions aboard your ship or whatever, and you can pry them and get more information and get more out of the story by putting in that extra effort to talk to them. But if you don't want to do that, you still have this great overarching story, and they still give you all the information that you're going to need. You know what I mean? And so, like, talking to your character or finding the voxophones would be the translation of that. And so, regardless if I didn't find a single fucking voxophone, which is stupid because there's some that are really, you know, obvious that you can find. You know, it's in front of you, you know? You know, there should be an overarching story. You should generally know what's going on, and I didn't. And so I guess that's my point, so.
I just think the game is just so interesting because there's just so much going on. There's so much cool stuff to find out. Like, I bet if I played through it a third time on 1999, I could find more.
I don't think that me or Paul are like...
Yeah, we're not saying that it's bad. I still
it's not
think the game is great.
Because I think it's a great game.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it isn't interesting or anything, because it is. It's really interesting, and it's got a lot of depth, and it's got a very rich universe that's like clearly well-populated. They put a lot of thought into it. And they did a lot of really great writing to make sure that everything made sense. The problem is a lot of that content isn't available to your average player because your average player isn't going to go through this game looking for the voxophone.
They're not going to play it three times.
And even if you are a player that's looking for the voxophone, you're not going to find all of them in your first gameplay without a walkthrough.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that a collectible item that you can or cannot pick up every single one of should be the media through which you tell your story. I think that your story needs to come first, and then you
More
can
details,
say
you know.
what details don't we need to tell the player? what details aren't so important that we don't need to tell the player. And for me, I think that the fact that Elizabeth had superpowers and that the Lutesses were the same person and they're just from alternate universes and
that's a pretty big
and
plot
all that,
point for me.
That's a pretty big plot point. Now, maybe the Lutesses thing, you could get away with not talking about it until very late in the game, but I think that understanding after you come to the understanding that Elizabeth is from another dimension, it should be pretty quickly after that that you find the information that, oh, well, Elizabeth's finger is in another dimension, and that's what kind of, because part of her exists in another dimension, she's able to access that dimension whenever she wants, or whatever. And I think that's information that they could concisely, slip in somewhere.
Anyway.
Or they could just do that in a conversation and just be like, even if they didn't say outright, like if Elizabeth was like, I've often wondered if it's because like the rest of my finger's somewhere else and the rest of me is just trying to find
like,
it. Like
I never even heard that implied, Nate. Like that's
they
how
never, they never like, even like they talk. She says it like towards the beginning when you first come into contact with her, she's like, go ahead and ask, and you're like, what? And she's like, about my finger, and he's like, oh, like he's a little embarrassed that she's talking about it, but they only talk about how she doesn't know what happened to it. They don't talk about like, oh, the fact that her finger is in another dimension turns out to be probably the most important plot point of the game that I didn't even hear about until a week after I beat it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
I mean, do you have any other? Is there any other things? Any other questions other than that?
I am done. I've said all that I need to say. I think that it's a great game. I'd give it a 9. It's not a 10 for me.
I wouldn't give it a 10. No game's a 10. I'd give it a 9.5. I'll give Uncharted 2 a 9.8, and that's my favorite.
I'd give Uncharted 2 a 10.
No game's a 10.
Well, if no, okay.
No, nothing's a 10. If nothing's a 10, then...
Well, no, things that are 10s have to be, like, personal preference.
No, I guess that's personal preference, I guess. That's okay, but I don't know. In my personal preference, nothing's a 10. Something always has a fly. There can only be something.
All right, well, in my... whatever. Okay.
Anyways.
So, I'd
give it an 8, maybe an 8.3 at the highest.
Because you hate the gameplay.
No, I love the story. I love the art style, but there are flaws with how the story is told, and I think that there are flaws in the gameplay.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else you want to mention about the game? Anything else? I'm trying to think of anything else that's super important. Well, one thing I have a complaint about.
Okay.
Some of the really interesting characters aren't explained enough. I think Jeremiah Fink was very interesting, and I don't know enough about him. I know that he was the creator of the Vigors. I know who, like, he was a businessman, and he took
draw attention to something really quickly?
Yeah. Sure, in the middle of my speech.
They live in a world where anybody could have superpowers. Booker's the only one that uses them.
People are afraid of them.
Booker's the only one.
I didn't even think about that.
Refuse to believe
the crow guys use them.
The crow guys use one. Yeah, and fire guys that are on fire use one. Those are the only two vigors that are used by enemies. Of all of the vast variety of
everyone uses possession
that lifts people up in the air. Possession. You have the shock jockey.
Fucking Bronco is supposedly in the lore. It's used by the founders to kill the Vox Populi.
Well, that's great.
Well, yeah, what just, I think...
It,
what,
it didn't make any sense to me.
What should have been explained, and, like, what I thought at first was, like, that Booker was... And, like, I thought this, but it was never proven to me or anything. I thought that just Booker was special, and I thought that when you drank the Vigors, that it was, like, a temporary effect, and that for some reason Booker, when he drank them, it became permanent kind of thing.
Yeah, I kind of thought along those lines, and that like they just never got resolved. So I was oh, well, then I guess not.
Well, I guess fuck it.
We don't really talk much about the Vigors. Maybe the thing I've heard that a lot of the a lot of the DLC is going to be like fan service type stuff that's going to explain a lot of the stuff that people are asking about. So here's the few of the things I want explained. I want to know more about Songbird. Who he was before he became Songbird. Who Songbird actually is, right?
See, that's, I want to know that's, about... That shit should have been in the Voxophones.
I want to know about who Jeremiah Fink was before he became this businessman who has all this money and can hire all the blacks to do... Sorry, blacks, but I mean, like, that's what the game implies. Like, he hires all the black and Irish people to basically work for him, right? I also want to know... I want to know a little bit more about Daisy Fitzroy as well. I don't think
they also never really explain, like, at least not for me, maybe in the fucking half of the lore that I never got to see they do. They never really explain why Booker adopts the name Zachary Comstock after he's, I mean, other than as a plot point to keep you from knowing that you're Comstock the entire time.
Okay,
I,
well, he had to change his name because he wanted a change of who he was.
That okay, was so one of the things that I, really quick... before we end, is just one of the things that I thought was really fucking useless was, you know, those little things that you, you know, put your head in and you see the videos or whatever.
I saw all of them.
Yeah, I whenever I saw one, I was like, oh God, I got to go see this because it's probably important information or whatever. And I go,
it was never important.
It was never important information. And I probably found fucking, you know, percentage wise, I probably found fucking more of those than I fucking did.
Well,
the
they're supposed to be for the people. That's the thing too. They're not just supposed to be the Voxophones.
I get
just for...
that, but it's supposed to be for the player.
It's part just, of the world.
I understand that it's part of the world, but it was just it was a waste of my time, is what it really was. if they wanted to have those little machines there, that's fine because they're before the people or whatever. But they then don't have them working, don't have them accessible to the player or whatever. Just have it be another bookshelf, you know? Because I'm just sitting there, Columbia, the flying city. Yeah. I'm in Colombia.
I'm well aware of what it does.
And then it would be over, and it would just, it'd be like, oh, okay. It would always be like three shots of like nothing. Ugh.
I want to know. The last thing I want to say is I want to know more about the Vox Populi. That's the one thing I really want. The Vox Populi are super interesting because why are they this fucking evil? There's no reason they should be this fucking evil.
I want to know how the world forgot about a flying city.
Yep.
No, I told you about how the world forgot about Flying City. I just explained it.
No, you didn't.
Okay,
you didn't
after the Boxer Rebellion.
You explained
after...
that about as well as fucking Irrational Games explained it.
Okay, after gonna... Columbia as attacks the Boxer Rebellion.
Longest spoiler cast ever.
Yeah, I know, but this game, it deserves it. After Columbia attacks the Boxer Rebellion, right? The United States, who owns Columbia... basically, they disavow Columbia. They say nothing about its involvement in the Boxer Rebellion, and they recall the city, right? The city, Zachary Comstock declares Columbia's succession from the United States and disappears in the clouds, and no one knows where he goes. Basically, that's the thing.
Well, and that's well and good. I just refuse to believe that...
giant city is going to go unnoticed.
I'm just saying, like, I mean, if Comstock's plan was to invade modern-day New York... I refuse to believe that there's any good plot point to say, oh, the U.S. Air Force in modern day wasn't able to track down a fucking floating city.
I don't think it was modern day. I mean,
do you think it was? Because it looked like fucking Manhattan to me.
Well, yeah. Well, what I will say is, like, when does the game take place? What year does it take place?
1984.
No, I would say it's like early 1900s. And so, like Sam was saying.
Did you say 1984?
Whoops, I was looking at the wrong thing.
You're a fucking fool!
I meant 1884, sorry.
1884. Okay, so if it's 1884, Elizabeth is what? She's like 20?
No, it's not it, dude. It's 18...
I'm looking at the Wikifuckingpedia page right now. Set in 1912 during the growth of American exceptionalism.
1912, yeah.
Okay, so it's 1912. So if Elizabeth is 20, let's say, and she was really old when they were bombing New York or whatever. Like, I don't know. Would you say she was 60, so maybe like 40 years? It's been 40, maybe 50 years.
When she bombs New York, it's 1984.
Oh, it is. Okay.
So
I didn't know
that kind of makes sense. I still refuse to believe that the Air Force would have missed flying air tip.
If it was like maybe 1960, well, I would have bought it.
The Columbia is built as a city, but it's built around an airship. It's like it's built around a battleship. The whole point of it was meant to be a weapon.
Okay.
It's said in one of the Vox phones.
If you have any other questions about BioShock Infinite, or if you're just like dead and don't want to speak another word of it, kind of like what I am right now.
Same.
You know, anyways, listen to our fucking podcast, and I guarantee we will not talk about BioShock Infinite.
If you want to know more about BioShock Infinite, though,
email
send us an
Nate.
Email. I will answer any question you want, honestly. I'll even give out my real email if you want, because I've done way too much research on one game for my own good. I love this game.
Yeah, I got that.
I'm going to go watch Inception in seventh time. Bye!